Hello and welcome to Tantramar Report on CHMA 106.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Sackville, New Brunswick, the heart of the Maritimes, on the traditional and unceded lands of the Mi'kmaq people. I'm Erica Butler. It's Wednesday, November 24th. Coming up on today's show. Tomorrow, it will have been 9 years since then 20-year-old Mount Allison student and Listigouche First Nation member Chris Metallic disappeared after leaving a party in Sackville on foot. In 2014, Elsabuktuk community member Annie Clare spoke with Chris's mom, Mandy Metallic, in a series for the Coast, highlighting missing and murdered Indigenous people on the East Coast. Today, we will revisit that conversation with Mandy Metallic, talking about the devastation brought on by her son's disappearance. But first, we'll take a look at some local news and information. New Brunswick's population eligible for a COVID-19 vaccine grew by about 54,000 yesterday as the province opened up its booking system to people between the ages of 5 and 11. The pediatric vaccine rollout is starting with clinics on Friday and over the weekend, but clinics in Zone 1 are already fully booked online with no waiting list available. The closest locations to Sackville listed in the government's booking system were the Moncton Coliseum and the Albert County Community Health Center. There were no pediatric clinics listed in Sackville in the province's system, though clinics at the Sackville Visitor Information Center are being planned for December 11th and 12th, and two other dates later in December. In a news conference Tuesday, Health Minister Dorothy Shepherd said the department will make adjustments to the rollout as gaps are identified.
The schedule is up now. And I think what we need to see is the bookings that are happening and then where we might have gaps. But again, we're talking about 54,000 compared to the hundreds of thousands that we've already done. So I think that you know, as always, we start early with our rollout and we pivot when we need to and either enhance with more services and bring our pharmacies online. We know we're bringing pharmacists online. So I expect that we'll be able to fill gaps that way.
Chief Medical Officer Jennifer Russell said that surveys at the federal level indicate that only about 50% of parents are planning to get their children vaccinated. Minister Shepherd said she was not yet planning to make the pediatric vaccine mandatory for kids to play in organized sports or go to restaurants.
We really don't want parents under any more duress. We want them to be able to get their education into the vaccines as freely as they will. And we believe right now that as we've done with all of the other processes, we are opening it up and we'll see how it goes.
Russell said public health is running an educational campaign on social media to inform people about the vaccine and encourage uptake. To that end, family doctor Rochelle Ouellette also presented at Tuesday's press conference, encouraging parents to consider vaccinating their kids.
I want to assure all parents that the COVID-19 vaccine has been thoroughly tested and has been found to be safe for children. Health Canada is recognized internationally for its independent drug review process, and it bases its decision on scientific and medical evidence that shows the vaccine is safe and effective. Before it was even reviewed by Health Canada, the vaccine was tested through a series of clinical trials, and these studies determined that the vaccine is safe for our children. They also determined the most effective dosage for this age group. And this dose is a third of the dose given to people 12 and older. The clinical trials showed that the vaccine is just over 90% effective for children aged 5 to 11 after receiving both doses.
Dr. Russell responded to questions from reporters wondering what she would say to parents who were considering foregoing the vaccine for their kids because of the lower risk of hospitalization and death due to COVID for that age group. Russell pointed to both protection for kids against long-term effects and complications, and also the benefits to the larger community in terms of reducing transmission.
I think when you're talking about children, we want to protect every single one of them. So even if the number of kids who would get sick is very small, that is not an insignificant amount when it comes to children. So that's first and foremost. Parents want to protect their children not only from severe outcomes with respect to hospitalization and death, but they also want to protect them from long COVID and the long-term effects of COVID. So we know there's those issues that parents are concerned about for their children, and we are as well. And we also know, again, that the benefit for the community is also there with respect to lowering transmission, lowering the number of people who will get infected, and thereby lowering the number of people in total who would need hospitalization in order to protect our healthcare system.
Russell told reporters that people who are double vaccinated have about one quarter less chance of getting COVID and also reduced risk of transmitting the disease if they have it.
So people who are double vaccinated, it reduces your risk of actually getting COVID in the first place by about 25%. So your risk of contracting COVID in the first place, your risk of transmitting is lower. So, and again, with the Delta variant and other variants that may emerge, we do need to take advantage of all of those opportunities. No matter how small a fraction we're looking at, we do need to continue to try to look at those numbers and keep them as low as possible.
The province announced 75 new cases of COVID-19 on Tuesday, with 40 of those in Zone 1. 25 of the new Zone 1 cases are still under investigation, meaning it's not clear where those people contracted the disease. One more person has died from COVID-19 in the province, a person in their 60s in the Fredericton region. The number of people in hospital jumped to 45 yesterday, and 18 people are in an ICU. There are now three COVID-19 outbreaks at the Moncton Hospital in three separate units: the Rehabilitation Unit, the Family Practice and Geriatric Unit, and the Stroke and Family Medicine Unit have all declared outbreaks. Horizon has not released how many cases have been identified in the facility. Visitor restrictions were already in place at the hospital, but now the Designated Support Person program will be temporarily suspended for the three affected units, and there will be no patient admissions or transfers to and from the units. The outbreak at the Dorchester Penitentiary has also grown. There are now five people who work at the facility infected with COVID-19, and 51 people who are incarcerated in the medium security unit have tested positive. Green Party leader David Kuhn says the province needs a major overhaul of community infrastructure to protect homes, buildings, coastal communities, roads, bridges, and rail lines from climate change risks. Kuhn echoed the call in the legislature recently from Memram Cuktancharmar MLA Megan Mitten, asking for the release of a study commissioned in 2019 to look at how to protect the Chignecto Isthmus. Mitten says people in the Memram Cuktancharmar riding are one major storm away from disastrous flooding, and there is no more time to waste. She says the study needs to be released so the government can finally begin taking the actions necessary to protect people in the Sackville area. The province has announced another feature of their two-year healthcare plan, a new Patient Voices Network to be overseen by the New Brunswick Health Council, a Crown corporation already tasked with public reporting on the performance of the healthcare system and patient engagement. Health Council CEO Stéphane Robichaud said the new platform will provide a diverse group of New Brunswick patients the opportunity to speak about their ideas and concerns. Health Minister Dorothy Shepherd visited the St. Andrews Wellness Center this week to highlight the role of communities in fulfilling her recently announced two-year healthcare plan. The Wellness Center opened in May and is housed in a building owned by the town of St. Andrews, which Shepherd cited as an example of how communities can help improve access to healthcare. The center provides access to two physicians, physiotherapy services, and other rotating medical service programs. It was developed through a financial partnership with the Sir James Dunn Foundation. Shepherd is also encouraging communities to play a more active role in a recruitment for positions such as physicians, nurses, psychologists, and mental health counselors. The town of Sackville recently approved seed funding for the Rural Health Action Group to undertake activities related to recruitment in the Memram Cuktancharmar region. Last up today, Chris Metallic was last seen at about 3 a.m. on November 25, 2012. He had spent the night at a party with his fellow Mount Allison students and left without his phone, wearing only a pair of flip-flops. It's now 9 years later, and Chris has still not been found. The last time Chris was likely seen was walking along Upper Abishagan Road in Upper Sackville. A witness on his way to work in the early morning saw Chris walking along the road and called the police to report it. He found it strange to see someone walking alone in the area at such an early hour. By the time police arrived 45 minutes later, Chris had disappeared, likely walking down a muddy side road towards where a flip-flop and footprints would be discovered much later. Police have conducted extensive searches of the area, including using divers in the Tantramar River and dogs who specialize in locating human remains. Chris's mother, Mandy Metallic, also returns regularly to Sackville to continue the search. Back in 2014, Elsabuktuk community member Annie Clare spoke with Chris's mom, Mandy Metallic, in a series for the Halifax Weekly The Coast, highlighting missing and murdered Indigenous people on the East Coast. Today, we'll revisit that conversation with Mandy Metallic, talking about the devastation brought on by her son's disappearance.
Hello, my name is Annie Clare. I am a Mi'kmaq from Elsabuktuk First Nation. You're about to listen to an interview I did researching an article for The Coast on murdered and missing Aboriginal women and men. Mandy Metallic is a Mi'kmaq from the Lestigouche First Nation in Quebec. She is the mother of Chris Metallic. He was studying at Mount Allison University in Sackville. Chris was last seen leaving a party in 2012. His whereabouts are still unknown. Mandy began by telling me when she first found out he was missing.
It was November 25th, 2012, when my other son, who was attending Mount Allison University, called me up and said that Chris never came home from a party the night before. It was around 8:30 that evening, Sunday evening, he called and said that Chris is missing, and he said that all his friends were looking for him all day. He left his cell phone at the party, his shoes, his glasses, and everyone thought he was going home, but for some reason ended up walking the opposite way.
Can you tell me a little bit about your son?
Well, he was quiet. He never got in trouble with the law. He had a lot of friends. He loved his sports, especially basketball. They're always winning championships. And he worked with children at youth center over here. Had a lot going for him, and he had, you know, his own hopes and dreams. And
what was he taking?
Anthropology. It was in his third year. He's gotten so many awards. It's not what he wanted to take. He wanted to go for pharmacist, but his science wasn't as high. His next, he was starting to struggle at the third year.
Okay.
Everybody had something good to say about him. He had so many friends. Everybody, a lot of people looked up to him. I don't understand why. What happened? We all had good relationships. All those thoughts, every horrible thought went through my mind, and I can't bear to think it.
Mm-hmm.
All I feel now is that he was upset that night and went for a walk. I don't know. I don't know what was going through his mind that night. He was very intoxicated. They were mixing drinks all night. Yeah, he was like, I have his passwords for everything. I have his cell phone. I read all his messages, emails, Facebook, Twitter. I read everything. There's no indication of him running away or being that troubled. All I know is that he was having a hard time. He had to drop two classes a couple weeks before this. I went into Sackville Sunday night after I got the phone call, and then I went to go report him missing at the police station Monday morning. They told me that they received a phone call at 5:30 in the morning saying that there was a suspicious person walking into the woods carrying bolt cutters that matched the description that I gave them. When they contacted the witness, he said, yeah, that's who he saw. And he wasn't sure if they were bolt cutters. And he turned around and he figured they were driveway markers, reflective driveway markers. He was one in each hand. He was just walking I seen him, that he was just walking at a good pace, didn't look cold, all by himself. And so they went out and started searching these trails, and they found flip-flops. And then one was in the mud, and they pulled it out, and then they followed. There was more footprints going in the mud all the way through the road on Ward Siding, and then some footprints went up White Birch Road, and they went down White Birch Road and back and forth and into the cornfield towards the river. And that's as far as they assumed he fell in the water. But they blocked it off. They drained it. The divers searched it. They couldn't find anything. And I don't think he landed in the water or went near it because he was afraid of water. He didn't know how to swim. And that water is not deep anyway. He could have stood up in there. I'm feeling that he kept walking. He followed the river, going deeper and deeper into the woods, and somehow made it back out onto the road and went back the other way where he was last seen. Or he kept going deeper and deeper in the woods. And we've searched. I can't even show a map on the computer screen of the whole area we searched because it's huge. We have maps printed out that cover my wall, and we've gone as far as 20 kilometers out in the woods, this way, that way, every way, except where we are right now. And so what if he, you know, the only place we're not searching is where he was last seen, because he's walking away from there. But what if somehow he made it back? So that's where we are now. And one police officer tells us that he thinks he fell in the river and got washed out to the bay. And another officer says, I asked him, you know, not as a, don't tell me as a cop or an investigator, what do you think, where do you think he is? And he says, I think he's still in the woods. So that's where we're keep on searching. We're not just going to assume he fell in the water and give up.
Yeah.
It's not an option for us.
So people in Sackville still go out with you?
First year and a half, maybe we've had a lot of help. Now there's just like four or five of us. There's not many of us anymore. We're not stopping. We're not stopping until we search everywhere. And even if there's some days we don't know where to go anymore, we find a place to go keep looking. And if we have to go over the areas again, we do it. There's so much going through my mind that just never, not, it's kind of hard to talk about without starting to cry. So.
Well, you can talk to me and say what you feel and what you think needs to be heard out there so the people can know what's going on. And
I'm devastated. I'm angry. This has cost us. I've lost count after 30,000. I hate that we have no more privacy anymore. Our lives are an open book right now. Everyone's watching us. And we were all happy before all this. Sometimes I think this is going to tear us all apart, but we're all sticking together. I do get some ignorant people online or that call me up during the night, psychics. A lot of people tell me some horrific stories. A lot lot of them were frauds or they were wrong. There's a video on YouTube. It's just called Chris Metallic. And it's a lot of pictures I put on there with a song. And I've had some mean comments on there, like, oh, he's an Indian, who cares? You know, like, I've put up with a lot of mean people that I don't know what they get out of tormenting me. So I'm paranoid a lot of times when someone calls me up and says, oh, well, but when they hear rumors, I heard this, I heard this, and I heard that maybe he's with this one or he ran away, or one person who made me think that she was a friend, she was helping us search. Turn around, she scammed me her money. I had to call the cops on her. I've had another woman who said she was a medium, and she said, I can help you find them. And she came to Sackville too, and I never met a psychic or medium before. So this was the first 2 weeks Chris was missing, so I was just like desperate. I said, I'll listen to anybody, help me find them. And then I found out she was bipolar, and she taunted me. She wouldn't leave me alone. I called the cops, and she still wouldn't leave me alone. And she said, no, she said, 4 guys beat him up, married him. And I had another person tell me that he was being held captive and being tortured in a basement. Kind of scary thoughts, that fearful thoughts that went through my mind, and someone and people telling me that, I thought I was going to lose it.
How many mediums have you talked to?
Over 40. Man, we're just still working with a couple right now who have an idea where he is, and that's where we're searching now, and believe some of them. And I was never a believer in these things before, and this is all we got to go on right now. And it's frustrating too when they're just making us run around in circles, and then they say, okay, well, let's go to another area. They jump around from area to area. I said, no, this is not a game. I get so frustrated with some of them. I didn't even put them on the government website for missing people yet. Only the police can authorize that, and they're waiting for me to give the okay, and I'm just not ready yet. Because I don't want them to be part of all these missing people. I don't want to be a statistic. Like, I just want to find them, and I don't know how to move on after this, and I'm scared that we're never going to find them.
You're listening to an interview with Mandy Metallic, mother of Chris Metallic. For The Coast, I am Annie Claire.
That was a conversation between Elsa Buckduck's Annie Claire and Mandy Metallic, mother of Chris Metallic, who has been missing for 9 years tomorrow. Chris's disappearance is still an open case with the RCMP, and anyone with information should call the local Sackville detachment at 506-364-5023. That's it for CHMA's Tantrum Hour Report for this Wednesday, November 24th. Are there stories you'd like to hear covered on Tantrum Hour Report, or an event you'd like people to know about? Get in touch with us at news@chmafm.com. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening.